This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharisa, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 8 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. I'm sure some of you have watched the show Dexter before, and if you did, you know that anything after season 4 was an abomination, but that's not important here. That's not why I'm bringing up the show. In the very first episode of the series, the first show of this entire series, the first words spoken are, "Tonight's the night."
Tonight's the night.
That's how I feel right now. Except instead of going to murder a bad person, my tonight's the night feeling has to do with the NFL draft, because the NFL draft starts tonight. Unfortunately for fantasy footballers, though, this draft is kind of filled with a lot of meh. Each guest I've brought onto the show this month has essentially said the same thing. There aren't many top-tier, game-changing talents that are going to drastically impact fantasy football. You've got some good running backs, don't get me wrong. You got Leonard Fournette, you have Christian McCaffrey, those two come to mind. But the wide receivers are pretty average with lots of question marks. You know, you do have someone like Corey Davis, who I think is in his own tier in this particular draft class, but overall, it's not a great class for fantasy football. The class does have a lot of depth at these positions, at running back and wide receiver, but that depth comes with not a lot of top flight talent. If you're a secondary guy in fantasy football or in football in general, the way that you sort of combat the fact that you're not as talented is through opportunity. And we look at this running back class. I'm going to focus more on running backs because the wide receiver class, it's going to be, you know, to me, the wide receiver class is we got to just see where these guys fit in, because there's a lot of slot guys. There's a lot of secondary options, like I said, not a lot of true X guys in this field. So it's important to see where these players land to kind of get their true outlook. But at the running back position, it's been touted as a deeper class, a good class, a very good class. We're talking multiple running backs drafted in the first round, which we don't see often. You have, like I said, Leonard Fournette and Christian McCaffrey. But I don't know, and I've said this before, I don't know if the opportunity truly lines up to what the perceived talent is. I think that there's this idea out there among fantasy football analysts that a lot of running backs are going to be neatly placed into perfect opportunities, creating a fantasy football movement of sorts with this running back class. That these running backs are only going to go to teams with clear needs at the running back position, creating a newer group of higher-end, high-volume backs in fantasy football, or at least higher-volume backs. But I don't want to be the bearer of bad news. It just doesn't work that way. I mean, look at last year in that class. Number two running back, but easily number two running back in that class. Some people had him number one, was Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry, and this is anecdotal, of course, but Derrick Henry could have fallen into a situation where he got more work during his rookie campaign. Instead, he went to a team that already had DeMarco Murray. Derrick Henry wasn't even the number one running back on his own team last year. He wasn't very fantasy relevant at all. And when you look across the NFL landscape right now, there just aren't that many teams needing a running back. There are more running backs out there, if you include this draft, than there are teams needing a running back. Let's just look at it this way. The teams that are in desperate need of a running back or running back help probably are Green Bay, Philadelphia, assuming Ryan Matthews is gone, Tampa Bay, assuming Doug Martin is gone, Washington, and probably Carolina. Those are the teams with the clearest need at the position. The teams with the most opportunity for a running back to come in and steal carries and get volume. Volume is king in fantasy football. We know this. There are some secondary teams. You have Oakland, Jacksonville, and the Giants. And then there's another tier of teams like Detroit, maybe Denver, Cincinnati, Kansas City, Baltimore, Indianapolis, Minnesota. But literally with every team out there right now, there's some form of ceiling limitation. I mean, even look at Green Bay and Tampa Bay, for instance. Green Bay became more efficient down the stretch, and they were using Ty Montgomery a little bit more out of the backfield because Ty Montgomery can catch passes. Ty Montgomery is a receiver slash running back. He's the Theo Riddick of the Packers. That will prevent a true ceiling for a running back going into that system, because that running back may not see as many targets as we want him to see. Granted, that's a great situation to go into in Green Bay. Tampa Bay is the same way. Tampa Bay, you have Charles Sims there who can demand some early down work, or at least be a change of pace early down. And then he's a great pass catching back. So don't get me wrong, those two spots, the running back that goes there is going to thrive. And you know, the other thing too, it's not like we see running backs these days seeing over 70% of the team's carries. I'm not insinuating that. I'm not talking about that. I'm just saying that the opportunity out there is not nearly as big for these teams as we might initially think. Even Washington. Washington has a bunch of mediocre running backs. I totally get it. I totally agree with it. But there's still bodies there who have some semblance of NFL experience. I mean, even Carolina has some capped upside when you think about it, because Cam Newton's there. When you're close to the end zone, you run Cam Newton. I know that they might not do that as much because of his concussion issues or what happened last year, but Cam Newton's still there. And then you have Oakland. Oakland just signed Marshawn Lynch, so who knows how they're going to use him and to what capacity. Jacksonville still hasn't shown that they can move the ball down the field effectively, so who knows what that's going to look like. And then New York with the Giants, you have a lot of running backs there. They're not great running backs, but they're bodies and they're in the way in some way, shape, or form. I think some of the other teams are pretty self-explanatory. I mean, you have Detroit. Amir Abdullah is going to be back. Theo Riddick catches a lot of passes. Denver has CJ Anderson. Cincinnati has Jeremy Hill and Gio Bernard. Kansas City has Spencer Ware. Baltimore has a ton of backs. Indianapolis still has Frank Gore. Minnesota just signed Latavius Murray. And that actually brings up another point too, with, you know, Latavius Murray made me think of this. What we see as opportunity isn't the same as what the team sees. You could argue, and you should argue very strongly, that no other position in fantasy football is dictated by opportunity and volume over talent more than the running back position. It's a replaceable position for the most part in the sport, in real football, aside from some of the higher end guys like a David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, Ezekiel Elliott, which means talent level is just less important overall. And that's why, despite me not being a Latavius Murray fan, I think Latavius Murray is average. His numbers were not great versus his teammates' numbers in Oakland. I don't think Latavius Murray is a special back, but I'm not coaching the Minnesota Vikings. The Vikings went out and gave him $5 million guaranteed, gave him a three-year contract. Mike Zimmer and his staff, that has to be part of your equation in the way that you view opportunity in the Minnesota backfield. We have to be open to the fact that what we see as talented doesn't always matter. The best backs, or what we see as the best in a draft or on a team, they don't always see the field. And we see that play out all the time at the running back position. But then, like I said, you know, you have all these teams who have running backs, some semblance of running backs. Now, I just want to be clear. I'm not saying that a Christian McCaffrey won't be fantasy relevant in 2016 or 2017, or that Leonard Fournette won't be fantasy relevant in 2017. I'm merely saying that I think that we're overrating all of these opportunities that are out there at the running back position. And then on top of that, let's say that you're a big Jeremy McNichols guy like I am. I love McNichols. I think McNichols could go to Green Bay and dominate in Green Bay. I think a lot of running backs could go to Green Bay and dominate in Green Bay. But Jeremy McNichols could easily fall to a team that doesn't actually need a running back. Jeremy McNichols could fall to, I don't know, let's just say the Steelers. Maybe the Steelers want some depth at running back because they don't have that much depth at running back. Jeremy McNichols on the Steelers, all of a sudden, he's a high-end handcuff. That's what Jeremy McNichols is. He's not someone that you're relying on in fantasy football. Despite the fact that you love, or I love, Jeremy McNichols going into the draft, doesn't mean that I have to love or assume that he's going to be good post-draft, because situation matters so much. Another example, everyone loves Joe Mixon on the field. Joe Mixon is a dynamic running back who could easily, when looking back at this class, we could say, wow, that's the best running back from this pretty above average class. Joe Mixon could go to a team like Kansas City, where Spencer Ware is the lead back there. You think that Kansas City drafts Joe Mixon and all of a sudden Joe Mixon is seeing even 175 carries? That's not a guarantee. I know that the running back position is very split up these days, in that having 200 carries is pretty rare, and having 50 plus targets while seeing 200 carries is very rare. It's not a normal thing anymore, where that used to happen quite a bit. And that allows us to not care as much about opportunity. But I do think that overall, across this NFL landscape, we're also seeing teams draft running backs in those middle rounds because depth is also becoming more important as a result of that. If you have more specialist backs, if you have more third down backs, or if you have a need for that, then you're going to see them being drafted onto teams that you might not expect them to be drafted on. Buffalo could draft a running back. Buffalo has LeSean McCoy. And all of a sudden, if they get a running back that you really like as a talent evaluator, then what are you going to do from a fantasy perspective? You're not going to be drafting him in the early second round of a rookie draft or the single-digit rounds in a redraft league if he's just a handcuff. That doesn't make much sense. You know, to be fair, I think a lot of this is just perception. I'm looking at it from the standpoint of this guy could be the guy in a backfield. And that's where I only see maybe Green Bay, Tampa Bay, and Washington as the true locations that we want a good rookie running back to go to. But someone arguing that there's plenty of opportunity for rookie running backs might be saying there are spots for these guys to thrive as rookies in a more specialist and more of a specialist role, or as a maybe 120 carry running back, not a 200 carry running back. I won't argue that. I don't disagree with that. But in general, what I'm trying to get to is that I think we might be overrating the year one impact that this rookie class could potentially make in fantasy football. I think it's easy to make that argument for the wide receivers because the wide receivers aren't that great. The fact that people have Cooper Kupp in their top five, you know, obviously he could go to a good spot. If he goes to a New Orleans or something, then Cooper Kupp is all of a sudden going to be a thing for a few years because he's already like 35 years old. But the fact that Cooper Kupp as a prospect is a top five wide receiver in this class to some people tells you enough. It's not a good class for wide receivers. And with running backs, I don't think that the short-term opportunity is really as strong as some people are making it out to be. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't be excited. Of course we should be excited. There's still some really interesting talent. I think Christian McCaffrey is one of the most intriguing fantasy football prospects that we've seen in a really long time. Leonard Fournette is going to be interesting to see where he lands. Corey Davis, a guy who we don't have a lot of information on because of the way that he handled everything that happened postseason. We don't have that many measurables on him. We don't know much about him. It's still a class that we should care about in some way. John Ross, another guy. If he falls in the right spot, it's going to be really fun to watch him. So with all this in mind, I wanted to get a little bit more info for all of you on this particular class rather than me just saying this random stuff about John Ross and Jeremy McNichols, but specifically about these potential first rounders who are going to be fantasy football relevant. Because after all, tonight is round one. So I gave my good friend Sigmund Bloom a call, another Yinzer for you. And I talked to him about guys like Leonard Fournette, Christian McCaffrey, Mike Williams, who I didn't even talk about, Corey Davis, and more. He gave some good insight on not only where these players might land, but how they'll perform at the NFL level. And of course, since we're both from Pittsburgh, we had to talk a little bit about the Penguins. Give it a listen. First off, Sig, I've got to ask you, are our Penguins going to do it again this year?
Well, I wish that Chris Letang was playing, but
I know
the way that this team seems to have rallied around Flower, around Fleury, and the way that it seems like every move that the GM Rutherford makes has some sort of crystal ball prescience, the way that they're not at all sitting back on their laurels as a team, a champion, that sometimes we see that in all sports, that it's hard to keep that intensity up. I almost think, JJ, we were last year. Whoever wins that Washington-Pittsburgh series is looking like a good bet to at least make the finals. Either way, I feel so joyous and you know, it's sports is can be kind of frivolous. I don't want to say blessed and make it sound like that, but growing up under the sign of Mario Lemieux and all the great players that were assembled around them, and Badger Bob and Scotty Bowman, and then seeing the team almost bottom out and Lemieux coming back and then actually literally buying the team to save them and keep them in Pittsburgh, and then the Crosby lottery, and even though we'll face the evil Ovechkin again, we got Malkin, you know, and the way that this team has continually reinvented themselves and continually showed the toughness and heart of a champion over with different casts, it's been a really fun team. And Penguins are an awesome animal. Don't tell me Penguins can't fly. They fly underwater. How badass is that?
Right.
It's Penguins for life, baby.
I love it. You're actually the second Yinzer in a row that I've had on the show, because I had Matt Williamson on last week. So gotta bring in that Pittsburgh love. But game one of that Penguins Capitals series is unfortunately the same night as round one of the NFL draft, which is why most people are probably listening to this right now, is to get your take specifically on things that are happening in round one. So I'll start off with the first overall pick, or the probable first overall pick, Myles Garrett. Is he the slam dunk, totally obvious first overall selection? Or and have the reports that are out there about the Browns thinking maybe we won't go Garrett, maybe we'll trade down, do you think that those are all just noise and they've always wanted Garrett this entire time?
I think that when we get to Thursday night and the pick is announced, it will seem like noise in hindsight. I do think, and this is, I want to echo something that Eric Galco said on my show last week, also on Scouting Sporting News, great work, always great work, is that, listen, people like Adam Schefter and our draft beat people, Eric Galco and Lance Zierlein and Dane Brugler and Josh Norris, when they are transmitting what their sources are telling them, they're not willingly being pawns in the lying season. They're working hard to try to give us information. The beat writers, they're hardworking people that are trying to keep us in the know. And coming from a time that I've been doing this when it was like a message board hobby to try to parse lines and beat writer articles from print newspapers, and we didn't even have any access to beat writers. There weren't podcasts to interview them and ask them questions. They didn't do radio, the hits and the numbers they do, and chats and all these things. There are people working hard to give us as much information and insight as they can. So is there some truth that there are some people in the building, maybe the owner? Remember, this is the owner that pushed for Johnny Manziel.
Right.
Could it be Hugh Jackson? Could it be Sashi Brown? I think that we might have situations. This is just something to keep in mind about the draft in general. Okay, first round, there's the GM, there's the owner, and there's the head coach. Two of those three have to be on the same page for there to be a pick. And maybe the third has to be talked into the pick. So is there a potential scenario where one of the three is still thinking, we aren't going to be a winning team without a quarterback? We have a chance to get a quarterback. And look, whatever you think about the 2018 class, plenty of quarterbacks that we projected high in the first round, a year out from the draft, don't even go in the first four or five rounds. Things change. So if you worked up Mitchell Trubisky, or, you know, if, and it isn't just the number one pick, it also might be in terms of the number 12 pick, they have so many picks, they can move up to from 12 to 3 or 4. And we keep hearing that teams at 2 and 3 and 5 and 6 want to trade down. So you have to do your thorough evaluation. And Mitchell Trubisky, Deshaun Watson, these are both quarterbacks that are kind of in the eye of the beholder. What can you live with? What's fixable? What's not fixable? There are going to be different opinions on that. So could there be someone in the room that is saying, probably the owner, why are we going to keep building without getting a quarterback? We have a chance to get any of the quarterbacks we want in this draft. Let's take the one we like the best. That's possible. But as I go on and on, because that's what I like to do, Myles Garrett is that slam dunk pick. And in a Mario Williams, Julius Peppers kind of way, not so much in a Von Miller, Khalil Mack kind of way. And those guys weren't first overall picks. But in the Mario Williams, Julius Peppers way, that if you were engineering a prototype defensive end in a Greg Williams 4-3 defense, it would look like Myles Garrett. He is truly, this term is thrown around way too much, he's truly an athletic freak. I think he's been doing yoga most of his life, so he can bend. He's like 6'4", 270. He runs a 40 where, like, he could be a wide receiver. He has 40-plus yards for, like, his physical tools are ridiculous. He also has ridiculous bend and flexibility in this massive, explosive, speedy body. And he finishes, like, with bad intentions. You know, I mean, he has shown me more than Mario Williams or Julius Peppers did at the time that they were taken very high in the draft, as far as applying this freakish athleticism to creating results on the football field. So let me put it this way. If Cleveland somehow Cleveland's this, then the San Francisco's sprinting up to the podium to get Myles Garrett. So yes, there's a reason why. And the two sides of the equation are there enough flaws in a Trubisky or Watson to make it an easy choice? Or are there not enough flaws, or is the ceiling high enough for Garrett to make an easy choice? And the answer on both of those is yes. If Marcus Mariota or Jameis Winston was in this draft, we would probably debate this for hours upon hours.
Yes, right. Right. Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, is if we did have a Marcus Mariota or a Jameis, and we're looking at that class compared to Myles Garrett, I think that in that situation, I wouldn't be shocked at all if they ended up going that quarterback route, which is, I mean, look, you look at the Browns roster, that is 100 million. I mean, it's the biggest need on a lot of rosters, but quarterback is by far the biggest need on that Browns roster. And so it, you know, I think that would be a really, really interesting debate. But like you said, it seems like Myles Garrett is indeed the slam dunk guy. Now, Sig, I want to look a little bit further down the draft, a couple picks later. You have the Jacksonville Jaguars sitting number four, or at number four. And there's a lot of fingers pointing to Leonard Fournette possibly going to Jacksonville at pick four. Now, last year, you were one of those folks who were backing Ezekiel Elliott to Dallas, given the unique situation that the Cowboys had. And as you know, and as our listeners know, I was not for that pick. But regardless of that, I want to get your take then on this situation. This is an interesting, unique situation in a way as well, with Jacksonville. And do you think that, number one, do you think that Fournette could really indeed land in Jacksonville? But the second part of that is, how do you feel about Fournette in Jacksonville?
Sure.
And do you see him kind of at the same talent level as an Ezekiel Elliott? And, you know, obviously they don't play the same type of they're not the same type of breed, but
right.
do you see them as the same type of prospect in terms of just overall grade?
So first, Fournette's going to go in the top 10. Okay. I'm a little out of tune with the NFL on this, because I think Fournette is more where the NFL has been. And Christian McCaffrey is more where the NFL is going. Okay. At the running back position. Now let's revisit Ezekiel Elliott. Ezekiel Elliott was truly a special snowflake. And I'm going to borrow from Dane Brugler. I'll try to, as we go through, name drop some amazing draft people, because these are
great.
The people you need to be listening to.
Absolutely.
He called him a chameleon back. And how perfect is that, right?
That's good. That's good.
Because what makes him special is that he can run zone, he can run man, he can pass block with the best of them, he can be an excellent receiver out of the backfield, he can win in short yardage, he can break long plays, he can be elusive, he can win collisions, you know? He can be anything you want a running back to be. And with the offensive line that Dallas had built, then that allowed them to unlock the most value from what they had built. And I think that we sometimes during the draft get too focused on need and too focused on balance. And I think we can see by how some teams draft that they aren't just looking to fill holes with picks, or they aren't just saying, well, are we better on offense or defense? Let's spend most of our picks on the side we're not better. You win also by maximizing advantages. You win by asking the other team questions that they can't answer. So that's why Ezekiel Elliott made sense as a running back at number four. Now, I don't think Leonard Fournette makes sense as a running back at number four, but so we have to tease these things apart this time of year. That there's our own personal evaluations or what we would do or what we think is right, and then there's simulating the NFL and simulating how the NFL thinks in this broad kind of way, but also simulating how individual decision makers think. Who's the decision maker here? To Tom Coughlin. Okay. Let me spit some stuff out. I'm cold and I'm crotchety. You know, Tom Coughlin is now the captain of this ship in Jacksonville. Now, much in the same way that Ezekiel Elliott completed the circuit for what Dallas wanted to build, Jacksonville and Fournette complete the circuit for what Tom Coughlin wants to establish, right? And you could see this last year with getting Jeremy Parnell, who was a backup on Dallas's line. You see this last year when they drafted AJ Cann. We'll see how that works out. But they were trying to get maulers, right? You see this when they sign Chris Ivory to a contract that I'm sure they would take back if they could. You see them, and also, by the way, when you have Blake Bortles and you basically have this year or bust with Blake Bortles, how can you make Blake Bortles a success, or at least minimize the damage he does? A balanced offense, a strong running game to set up play action downfield to Allen Hurns and to Allen Robinson. That is how you mitigate what you have. So it's really easy if you try to simulate Tom Coughlin to say, this is the attitude pick, right? This is a pick about our aspiration as a franchise that we want to establish. And look, don't watch Leonard Fournette in 2016. He was banged up. And that's the, And I don't want to yada, yada, yada that, okay? Because there is something to be said, you know, JJ, as we parse through everything in fantasy football every week, there's a big difference between a running back who, when they're on the injury report, can still basically play 80 or 90% level of themselves, and a running back that, when they're on the injury report, it, don't have the tools they usually have.
Right, as a shell of themselves.
Yeah,
right.
And that was and Fournette wasn't the Fournette we'd seen in the past last year. But if you watch Fournette, I was just watching the Auburn game from 2015, and I did a few cut-ups and put them on Twitter. He disposes of defenders, and this is Auburn. Okay, this is a top Division I SEC program. There are guys trying to tackle him that he just puts his head down and plants them on their ass on multiple plays. And there's one guy that tries to go up high on him, and he just swings over him like he's a monkey bar. In addition, he's making these lateral moves. No disrespect to Derrick Henry, stuff that Derrick Henry, for as freakish as he is, cannot do. So it isn't just, again, that Fournette isn't as flexible as Adrian Peterson. I don't want to compare him to Adrian Peterson. I like Matt Waldman, get your RSP, Stephen Davis, right? So imagine Stephen Davis with a little more lateral agility, but with that same attitude running the ball that John Fox had with him in Carolina. That's what Fournette can bring. So I see how, if you wanted to establish a smash mouth where we're going to run and you still can't stop us, power gap scheme, not zone. You're not going to stretch the defense out and let him pick his gap. No, you're going to run right at him. You're going to smash him, and he's going to smash him at the end of the play. And look, there are things that analytics don't capture here. When Leonard Fournette watched that Auburn game from 2015, draft breakdown is such an invaluable resource.
Yeah, it's a great tool.
It's demoralizing. It's demoralizing to have to try to tackle that guy play after play after play. While there's also guys coming downhill and slamming into you in a power running game, by the fourth quarter, you are a broken person. And that's when you see, as the game goes on, the runs that Fournette are pulling off. Now, instead of a 12 or 15 yard run, it's a 35 yard touchdown, because he also can motor for a big guy. So if you want to play that style of football, he's as rare as what Ezekiel Elliott can do. Because one of the things about Ezekiel Elliott, and I think it was Vince Wilfork that said this, Marcus Mosier was the one who found this quote from Wilfork, was that the scary thing about playing Dallas is you don't know if they're going to go man or zone, right? You can defend as a defender. If you know that it's a zone running play, then you can like be on your toes and ready to like dance and move and defend your gap. And if it's a man blocking, then you can get on your heels and be ready to like dig in. But if you don't know at the block, at the snap, which one it's going to be, you're in trouble. And Ezekiel Elliott was a special back for that. And if you want to just do the, we're going to blast you backwards off the line style of football, Fournette is special for that style of football. But then, JJ, we step back and say, you're still Jacksonville. You still have Blake Bortles. Is it going to work? Yeah, I don't know.
That's the thing that gets me with it, is that, you know, you can look back, and you and I went back and forth about the Zeke pick a lot. I mean, we talked about that selection specifically a ton, and that situation in general, the biggest difference to me, aside from the fact that Jacksonville is more talented defensively and that can just change the way that you build that team, but the biggest difference is that entering last season, the Cowboys had Tony Romo at quarterback, and with Blake Bortles under center, that's a scary thing. Now, again, you made a good point that they could try to mask what Blake Bortles, his deficiencies, which are, there are many, and a guy like Fournette could help. But at the same time, that's, you know, I guess I should ask, do you think that that's a good or bad thing? You know, like you almost want to know more about your quarterback rather than that.
They need to decide. And right. And it may, if it's successful, or it may mask things a little bit. And also in the AFC South, you might win it at 8-8. But I will say this. It's easy for us to sit here, and I love to do it. And it is easy. I have a great job. We have great jobs. To say, well, I second guess what they're doing. But you hire Tom Coughlin, and you hire him to come in and put his blueprint down and put his fingerprints on the roster. And hire his guys and implement his plan. And it's a valid plan, okay? There isn't a Jalen Ramsey. So it isn't like when we debated Ramsey and Elliott, and Ramsey has played this out, by the way. You can see the other half of the equation here. Is that Ramsey's better than any of the defensive backs in this draft. I mean, Malik Hooker from Ohio State is is potentially special if you want to run a single high safety that allows you to really like mess around with more corner blitzes and slot corner blitzes. And you can do a lot more with that single high safety. You can be like Earl Thomas or Reggie Nelson and at his height. So maybe there's an argument from the hooker. There's not a Jalen Ramsey in this draft, right? So if they take Fournette and they're taking him over Jonathan Allen or Solomon Thomas or Malik Hooker or Marshawn Lattimore, those players are not on the level of a Jalen Ramsey. So I'm not going to criticize Coughlin too much for coming up with a plan and trying to make it happen. And maybe if Bortles remains the unprepared and erratic Bortles we saw last year, then we can't truly judge this until year two or year three, because maybe, you know, Jacksonville, the other thing that's going to be interesting here is quarterback is still in play for Jacksonville, if not in round one. And no matter what you think is going to happen in the draft, every year in the draft, at least one thing happens in the first round that nobody saw coming. Maybe it's Jacksonville at the quarterback. So we'll see what they do secondarily at quarterback. But I'm not going to criticize. I mean, I would rather see a team have clarity and implement a plan that is cohesive and makes sense that I disagree with than to be all over the place and not truly have a plan and just be throwing darts and make one pick based on analytics and make one pick based on production and make one pick based on, oh, let's get faster. Have a plan and put your plan in place. And taking Fournette would tell me that's what they're doing.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think the opportunity cost point that you made too is a really good one. I mean, like you said, the debate with Zeke last year had to do with Jalen Ramsey and that filling a need and that being a position of great importance on a football field, corner. And I think that's a great thing to mention with Fournette is that this draft class in general, we have the depth, but not the stars that we necessarily have had in years past. So I think that's another example as to why a guy like Fournette would make a little bit more sense than what it looks like at its surface. Let me just ask you before we move on. Do you think, just flat out, do you think that Jacksonville is going to take Fournette fourth overall?
I do. I'd say it's at least 50-50. I would say that Solomon Thomas would be a player that, if we have penciled in to San Francisco at two, and perhaps even at Chicago at three, if Solomon Thomas is still there, that may make it harder. And talking to Dane Brugler about it and Eric Galco about it, there's an outside chance of maybe an offensive lineman. Offensive linemen are going to go higher than people think in the draft. It's a poor offensive lineman class, but there's a need there, and the ones at the top are going to get pushed up the board. But I would say it's at least 50-50. And if it's not, and look, this is the main thing. If it's not Jacksonville, then look for the Jets. If it's not the Jets, then look for Carolina. And I would be really surprised if it's not Carolina. And if it's not Carolina, then Cincinnati, who we know how they feel about Jeremy Hill. And so, like, Leonard Fournette, Jeremy Hill, LSU backs. Like, Leonard Fournette is the back that Jeremy Hill, like, dreams about being and then wakes up.
Right, that Jeremy Hill wishes he was.
Exactly.
Or at least that the Bengals thought that Jeremy Hill was.
Right.
So let's stay at the running back position. Let's talk about my RB1, and you mentioned him too. I don't know if you have. I don't know if you have him at RB1 or not.
I do.
But Christian. Okay. Great. So Christian McCaffrey. So let's say first, where do you think that he ends up, and what type of fantasy producer do you see out of him? Like, what kind of volume could you see out of him year to year? Like a breakdown maybe of attempts to targets,
sure.
Because we know that he's not the traditional back. But talk to me about Christian McCaffrey, why you have him RB1, and let's talk about him from a fantasy standpoint.
Well, why I have him RB1, whether it's a fantasy or an NFL standpoint, is it's where the NFL's going. And JJ, I think that in 10 or 15 years, and may we all be doing this 10 or 15 years from now, we're going to be talking about running backs like Fournette. And Fournette has good hands out of the backfield for the kind of back he is. But I think we're going to look at running backs so one of the other questions about Fournette is he was a fullback, and Jacksonville did just sign a fullback. With a fullback at I formation, thumbs up. Shotgun, zone, read kind of runs, not as much. Remember what DeMarco Murray looked like in Philly, you know, in these zone systems.
And we've seen issues with Adrian Peterson in shotgun
exactly.
as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's, a running back they want to compare Fournette to. McCaffrey is more like that chameleon back that Ezekiel Elliott is. David Johnson, I'm still going to say, is the best receiving running back I've evaluated in the 12 years or so I've watched guys really closely for the draft, more because he had some ridiculous ball skills and ability to adjust to the ball in flight. But I think McCaffrey's a better route runner than Johnson. I think McCaffrey, and beautiful job by agents, and agents affect so much perception here, but then perception becomes reality. It's America, baby. Mm-hmm. When he ran, he focused as much on his ability as a split, not just a receiver out of the backfield, but a split out wide receiver or receiver in the slot at his pro day, which is really smart because teams, just like I was saying with Elliott, you don't want the defense to know what you're going to do. You want to be unpredictable. Christian McCaffrey allows you to have empty back sets that can really confound a defense. He allows you to, you can put him back in motion in the backfield. He's got tremendous footwork. He's got long speed. He's a hard-nosed, tough running back. He can run inside. He's not as powerful as Fournette. Fournette's special in that capacity. But he can do all the things you ask a running back to do. But this extra added dimension, and then the name that comes up a lot is Brian Westbrook. So let's shift gears to fantasy for a second. Brian Westbrook was never a 300 carry back. McCaffrey's never going to be a 300 carry back. But like Westbrook, he can catch 60, 70, 80 passes. And this is where the golden rule of fantasy football, the cardinal rule, know your scoring system and lineups. Know your scoring system and lineups. In a full PPR, Christian McCaffrey can be a running back one right away. Now, in Carolina, let's start talking about his range.
Yes.
Because in Carolina, Carolina's got to make some changes to accommodate a player like Christian McCaffrey. And it might take a little bit of a ramp up. Philadelphia, Brian Westbrook, Doug Peterson, you know, very good. Indianapolis, and the other team we have to think about here is Denver. Denver, he's been around the Denver organization his whole life. He's a Denver kid. They love him. Denver at this point in the course, you know, you have to take into account the other thing we have to take into account here is he's a football kid. He's been around football his whole life. He understands the demands and rigors of the NFL, and that is catnip to first round of decisions. Like that, and this is why he's part of the reason he's running back one, especially in NFL draft terms, or at least running back two. And really, there's not really a Fournette or McCaffrey choice. It should be very clear, depending on what you're looking for at running back. I'm talking about from an NFL organization standpoint, who your running back one is.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
That's where it's been really interesting to see the reports coming out of Carolina, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, McCaffrey isn't nearly as natural a fit as Leonard Fournette is. And I think that you have to worry, from a fantasy standpoint, too. You know, the Panthers don't target their running backs out of the backfield through the air. They haven't with Cam Newton under center. And I do think that there is a chicken or egg situation there where they haven't necessarily had that guy to consistently throw to in the backfield. But I also don't think that a running back necessarily fits that system perfectly well. So I think that to that point and what you're talking about, you know, McCaffrey, you know, I guess would it be shocking if the Panthers are up on the clock? Let's say there's one scenario where Leonard Fournette's already been drafted. So they say, oh, we're going to get Christian McCaffrey. But then if Leonard Fournette had not been drafted, they're going to say, oh, we'll just get Leonard Fournette. Do you think that the Panthers front office and the Panthers staff is thinking that way? Or do you think that they just have it clear cut? We're getting Fournette because he fits what we're doing, or we're getting McCaffrey because we want to evolve what we're doing?
It very well may be that they are in that kind of either or situation. Remember when the Steelers took Jarvis Jones and yes. then that, well, you know how that went. And then they took Bud Dupree, which are two right. like diametrically opposite philosophies and approaches to the draft. So I mean, this is going to be the last year for Jonathan Stewart to play a big role in that backfield. And they very well could because this is one of the things about Fournette. If you draft Leonard Fournette, this is where I'm going to do a rant, right? You better change your running game to fit him. Come on. If you spend a top 10 pick on a player, you need to meet him halfway. You know, McCaffrey is not necessarily that kind of player. You don't have to gear your offense around McCaffrey.
Bingo. Yep. Yeah.
So maybe that gives them that fallback. But I think that of the four main possibilities, Carolina, Philly, Indy, and Denver, definitely Carolina is the least exciting. And Indy is the most exciting. And Philly somewhere in between, because Ryan Matthews isn't long for that team. And Denver, you know, obviously we have to cast some shadows on CJ Anderson. It's always something with CJ Anderson. So I'll say this. If we hear the classic, there's been a trade, and McCaffrey's not off the board yet, and no quarterbacks were off the board, I'm getting tingles just thinking about it. It's going to be some real suspense of who that team traded up for, because McCaffrey, there's only one of him in this draft, and because he's from a football family and background, that makes decision makers. That's what they fall asleep with a smile on their face when they take a player like him in the first round.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned the importance of his ability to catch football and a running back's ability to catch football and where the NFL is just generally moving. And even just from a number standpoint, a target adds about 0.15 more expected points for a running back than a rush does, and it just naturally. It's just where things are right now. As each year goes, running back rushing efficiency stays relatively the same, while running back receiving efficiency just continues to climb, because that's where we're at in the NFL right now. So that to me is the clear reason, I think, that aside from just how good he is,
yeah,
the clear reason why if you had some sort of tiebreaker, you needed a tiebreaker, that's kind of the direction that you would go. So let's one more running back I want to talk about. Is it Tampa Bay or bust for Dalvin Cook in this first round?
It feels that way, right? Yeah. So with Dalvin Cook, you got shoulders, multiple shoulder surgeries, character issues, fumble problems, not quite as versatile as McCaffrey. I mean, still a guy who can make chunk plays and big plays as a receiver out of the backfield. Maybe not quite the inside runner that McCaffrey is. But still, let me put it this way. Whether Cook goes in the first or second round, he's going to be a centerpiece of the offense. So for fantasy, we just shouldn't worry about this. But if we're talking strictly about – and this gets into like, can you believe, JJ, by the way, that Vegas is taking bets on the draft now?
It's crazy.
That's weird, right? Because it isn't like the outcome of a sporting event.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You can actually get inside information, and like this is like a decision that human beings make, not like – let's put these two teams together and see who wins.
It's a good point.
But so is Cook a first rounder or not a first rounder? There's a bet out there over or under 2.5 running backs in the first round, right? Fournette's going in the first round. McCaffrey's going in the first round. Joe Mixon's not going in the first round. Maybe there's some like 1 or 2% chance Alvin Kamara gets into the first round. But we're really – this bet really boils down to, will Dalvin Cook go in the first round or not? So I would say that if he goes in the first round – there's an 80 or 90% chance of Tampa Bay. Now, Eric Galco told me that he thought there are enough teams sold. There are some teams like Oakland that Cook's not going to go to. What's interesting, though, is Oakland, like Reggie McKenzie said, that Joe Mixon's a good kid.
Of course.
And I'm getting off on tangents now. but Dalvin Cook apparently is not going to go to Oakland. But Eric thought that there's enough teams that are sold on Dalvin Cook that he will go in the first round. But it really is probably Tampa because, well, Jameis Winston, right? And even though the Roberto Aguayo thing didn't go down the way they'd hoped, and I do think that they asked Jameis Winston, like, do you endorse taking Roberto Aguayo in the second round? And you remember those all that talk about Aguayo, like, he's like a leader. He's not a kicker. He's a football player, you know? And I actually don't think that – let me look at how much the Steelers let Roethlisberger, almost cursed, metal everything, right? JJ, I know you've seen the reports that every time a quarterback has shown up on the South side, Roethlisberger just materializes and is just like hanging out, you know?
Yeah, of course.
And I think it's because he wants to help. Like, he, you know, he feels a sense of ownership in the franchise. Also, he's weighing in like, give me another weapon, you know? By the way, just as a quick aside, Eric said he saw Evan Engram as a potential surprise first rounder. And I said, to who? He said, well, what would you think about him in Pittsburgh? Getting off tangents again. So I do think that because of Jameis Winston, that in Winston and Cook now, and Jeff Lloyd, love Jeff Lloyd, one of my favorite draft people, he's doing a lot of great work covering the Jets draft possibilities, said he wants to get Dalvin Cook away from Florida, which I think makes sense. So on one hand, you have the idea of mitigating his character issues by putting him with Jameis Winston and putting him under that roof of, a familiar place and face. On the other hand, you want him to get away from there. But I think that it makes sense from Tampa Bay from a need standpoint. It makes sense from Tampa Bay. We saw them last year, speaking of attitude as a franchise, like whenever Jaquizz Rodgers took over the backfield when Doug Martin got hurt, where you saw they wanted to run and run and run some more and run some more. So now you have that as play action passing setting up DeSean Jackson downfield. And you add a dynamic weapon out of the backfield like Dalvin Cook, who if he gets the corner, look out. Now we're really talking. And remember, that defense had moments last year that, like, what they did to Russell Wilson. Oh my God.
That was a huge reason that the offensive philosophy shifted last year, is because the defense stepped. The second half of, I've written about this too. I mean, you look at like Mike Evans and what happened to him in fantasy. His season was so much like DeAndre Hopkins 2015 because that defense just started to click. It wasn't as significant as what Houston did in 2015 defensively after that Miami game that they played, where they just, you know, just, after that game, the halfway point, that defense just clicked. And the same thing happened to a degree with Tampa Bay. And after that point, Tampa Bay not only started to win more games, but they were able to control their offense a little bit more, and they were able to actually do what they wanted to do. That was run the football. So that's that, you know, what you're saying, you know, that makes Dalvin Cook, that allows him to fall into that lap, and he's a great fit. And I also think that in the late first round, you have teams that have running back needs, but those teams also have a lot of defensive needs, yeah. Whether you're looking at a Green Bay or whether you're looking at a New Orleans, for instance, they could use another running back. Not that I think that Cook would be the fit there, but you know, you have these teams that need a running back, but there are just greater needs than what I think you would see out of Tampa Bay.
So just a real quick coda to this, I'll say Washington, and then this is, I mean, I'm telling you, that's what Eric Galkis said. Washington is another team to look at for Cook. But I do think if Cook doesn't go to Tampa Bay, we're probably waiting until Friday night. And also probably he'll end up in a lesser fantasy spot than Tampa Bay.
Yeah, very true. You know, obviously the later in the round, the better offense you're just generally going to be a part of. So let's shift then to wide receivers. Mike Williams has been really, really intriguing as a prospect, because at first I thought that there was going to be a classic just film metrics people just going at it on Twitter all the time. But I think a lot of film people like yourself aren't really as high on Mike Williams. You know, from my perspective, his market share numbers aren't fantastic. You know, his touchdown share is one that I question. And it's really odd because his touchdown market share is lower than what I would want. And it's weird because he's a player that can win those types of battles. But I want to get your take on first, is he going to be the best Mike Williams at wide receiver that the NFL has ever seen? But also, you know, how high do you think he can go? What's your take on Mike Williams and so on?
Well, I'll still take rookie year Syracuse Mike Williams of all Mike Williams. But it is funny because it is like too much that, much like Syracuse Mike Williams, where some character stuff more. He was better than a fourth round talent. And USC Mike Williams, where, I mean, there's got to be some questions about desire and things like that when you play. Like,
well, I have USC Mike Williams in my database as fat Mike Williams.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's not like he couldn't play, you know? So here's the thing that is strange to me about Mike Williams. In the time that I've been watching players closely to evaluate them for the draft, I've never seen a wide receiver as comfortable with a defensive back in his hip pocket. It's like he would rather play the way I've described it is it's like the defensive back is a landmark in his route, you know, where that's how he runs his routes, is to stick by the defensive back so that when the ball is in flight, he can jostle him. Because the guys he's playing with, he's 3, 4, 5, 6 inches taller. He's 20, 30 pounds heavier. And he's just a big, thickly built guy. And when the ball's in the air, he can jostle his opponent. He can hang in the air over them. He won't jump out of the gym. So JJ, from an analytics standpoint, you can pull more strings than me. We need two dimensions on the vert. We need apex, but we also need hang time. And Mike Williams' hang time, I know his apex was, what, like 32 or 31 or 33, like nothing special. Although when you're 6'4", 32, 33 is plenty enough. Just like his 40 isn't blazing, but he can threaten a defense deep because he's so big. But he can jostle a guy, get him out of stride, and he can hang over his opponent, and that's how he wins. And he also wins on slants and posts because he knows how to get his body positioned in between the defender and the ball in flight, so that you just can't, he walls you off basically. And then he's not as nearly as creative after the catch as Corey Davis or elusive. He's not as lethal as John Ross, the other first round receiver here. But he's still a hoss and a load to bring down after the catch. So you add in this idea that he's going to win at the catch point a lot, and the name team coming up is Alshon Jeffrey, and it's fair. And then he can run those routes well. The post, those routes where he gets inside position, he gets a good release, he can use his hands to get that release, get inside of his opponent, and then it's over. And with a good quarterback that, like Aaron Rodgers, for instance, that throws those back shoulder throws like he does to Devontae Adams, like Derek Carr to Devontae Adams at Fresno State, or a quarterback that's willing to throw a receiver open. Because that's the thing. Mike Williams doesn't really get open. So when we watch wide receivers like Matt Harmon, reception, perception, what's the judge of success? Did you get open? Mike Williams doesn't really create separation and get open. I don't think he's trying to. I don't think he's comfortable out in space on his own. I think he's comfortable with somebody checking him, that when he knows the ball's coming his way, he's gonna manhandle it. You know, here's what gives me pause. The NFL is full of cornerbacks who are either more athletic or more skilled than the guys he's been doing that to at Clemson. So Waldman and I talk about it. We bring up Brent Grimes, right? Like Brent Grimes, and maybe not Brent Grimes now, but Brent Grimes at his peak as a player. Brent Grimes was giving up 4 or 5 inches to a player like Mike Williams. Brent Grimes is giving up 20 or 30 pounds to a guy like Mike Williams. But Brent Grimes doesn't have any back down in him. He's not going to be thrown off or intimidated by a wide receiver that wants to put his hands on him. He's going to fight fire with fire, and he knows how to play the ball in the air, right? Like a guy like Jason Verrett for the Chargers is like 5'9". He plays the ball in the air with his instincts and leap timing and ball skills like he's, you know, 6'1 or 6'2 with long arms. So when Mike Williams has to see guys like that, in general, when I see players in college who win mostly on their, like classic Josh Norris, where he wins, if it's based on athletic advantages, then that's going to have to go back to the drawing board a little bit to make it work in the pros. That's why I have some pause. But he will probably be the first wide receiver off the board, because even though Corey Davis is a vastly superior prospect, and I'm saying that in objective terms, come at me, bro. I'm saying
sure.
The NFL still has to make defensible decision in the first round. Will you lose your job because you took Mike Williams over Corey Davis because Corey Davis didn't work out and doesn't have measurables in the NFL way and he played at Western Michigan? No, you're not going to lose your job. Will you lose your job if you take Corey Davis over Mike Williams and Corey Davis is a bust? Maybe. So I want to introduce this to you, JJ, because a lot of times we say, I don't hear this as much, and it makes me feel better. The people used to say, like, about people like you or me, right? Oh, well, JJ, you're not going to lose your job if you tell people to take LeSean McCoy in the first round. He's a bust. But the guy who makes the call for the NFL draft, he might lose his job. Why is that a good thing? Why is that a good thing? That's a bias towards making safe, defensible decisions. So taking Mike Williams over Corey Davis is a safe, defensible decision. And will he be the first wide receiver off the board? Yes. Tennessee, let's use the Tennessee picks from 5 to 18 as basically the range here.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
He could go as high as 5 to Tennessee or as late as 18 to Tennessee. Or Tennessee could trade down from 5 and take him from the pick they trade down from. Buffalo is definitely a possibility. And don't we all know whoever your favorite wide receiver is for fantasy football, pray he doesn't go to Buffalo.
Yeah, seriously.
Pray he doesn't go to Buffalo. Because if he goes to Buffalo, which is very possible, maybe from a team building standpoint, that makes sense. For fantasy, we're going to be, you know, Cincinnati is still a team to keep in mind here. New Orleans, if they don't trade for Malcolm Butler and have 2 first-round picks, is fascinating. Baltimore is fascinating at 16. Philadelphia, remember, Philadelphia's moves at wide receiver were short-term moves.
Yep. Alshon, 1-year deal, Torrey.
Who do we keep comparing Mike Williams to? And isn't Carson Wentz exactly the kind of quarterback who can riff with a player like Mike Williams?
Yeah, so yeah, that's a great point.
So we've got a lot of intrigue, but we will hear Mike Williams' name in the top 20.
Yeah, I think he's probably a lock to be the number one wide receiver off the board. A lot of that has to do with what you mentioned. We don't have much information on Corey Davis. He's kind of just disappeared over this the time since the season ended. So I want to ask you, though, it sounds like you have Corey Davis number one on your board at wide receiver. What do you see as the biggest negative surrounding Corey Davis?
Well, I mean, from the NFL evaluation standpoint, it's that he played at a lower level of competition and they don't have measurables on him. But I don't, but I don't care about that. I'm like a faith in the film crowd when it comes to a player like him, because at a lower level of competition, I want to see that you look like clearly the best player at any position on the field. And he looks like clearly when you watch those MAC games, he's clearly the best player on the field, and they know he's coming. And much like Fournette in LSU in 2015, you know he's coming. You know he's going to be the focal point of the defense, offense, game plan, and the defense's attention, and he still gets his. So what I think the biggest negative surrounding him as far as his on-field production or standpoint, I'm sorry, the on-field outlook is he's not – sometimes physical cornerback play will throw him a bit. Sometimes guys, again, almost like the Mike Williams approach, but from a cornerback, guys that will jostle him, guys that will try to basically throw him off his timing, throw him out of his game, can sometimes it's interesting because he relishes the combat after the catch. He's unbelievable after the catch for like a 6'3", 220 guy. Like sudden, has all kinds of great strategies. He's like a running back. Like he's already got the move loaded up for the next guy when he's eluding guy number one, you know. But he's not as combative when it comes to getting position in his routes, getting position when the ball's in flight. He still wins in those ways, but not in a decisive way. But this is the kind of stuff that is making him a top, when on my board, say a top 10 or 15 pick instead of a top 5 pick. Not something that takes him out of first round consideration. It's why he's not quite AJ Green. You know, athletically, I think he's very close. I think that he's maybe better after the catch than AJ Green. He's not as physically dominant at the catch point. But Corey Davis, just as a quick aside, he creates unbelievable separation on release. There are times where you can see that he can just jab step in one direction and then explode. His legs are so springy that for a long limb guy that he can step in one direction and then spring to the other direction. And right off the snap, he creates like 5 yards of separation. Right off the snap. What do you do? How do you defend that? So unlike Mike Williams, Corey Davis is going to translate to timing-based offenses. He's going to translate to vertical offenses. He's going to translate to anything you want. And Mike, he's going to make a mediocre quarterback, like put Corey Davis with like a Kirk Cousins, you know? I don't know if Kirk Cousins is going to riff with Mike Williams, but he's going to riff with Corey Davis. Everyone's going to riff with Corey Davis.
Do you think Corey Davis is the highest probability landing spot is Tennessee at this point?
Well, do they take Mike Williams? Because they need to get a corner out of like
Sure. So let's assume that early one goes to a different position.
So if we're simulating Corey Davis, what I think happens is now what I want to believe in my heart is that an organization is going to say, we don't care about the workout. Like a Cincinnati or a Carolina, a team, mm-hmm. like he should rightfully be a top 10 pick in this draft. And I want to believe that a Carolina or Cincinnati, I mean, and for fantasy, we wouldn't be that excited about either one of those destinations as we would if he falls farther in the first round. What's more likely is think of a smart organization that sits back and lets the draft come to them and profits year after year because of situations like this Corey Davis situation. And, you know, Baltimore at 16. Okay, so after 16 or 18, if Tennessee doesn't take him, now I don't care what your wide receiver depth chart looks like. All right, Tampa Bay should take him at 19. Detroit should take him at 21. The Giants should take him at 23. Once he gets past that Tennessee 18, I don't care what your depth chart looks like. You don't pass up a chance to get a Corey Davis. You don't pass it up. And of course, one team that's still in play, maybe the Steelers.
Yep. That would be crazy. That would I would be all for that.
Let's change our pants.
Yes, we most definitely would have to change our pants. Let's stay with wide receiver. I think the last guy that we'll talk about at the position, just because we're talking round one here. And who knows what happens with him because of the injury concerns, but we have John Ross. You know, where do you think that he could land? Either, you know,
yeah.
What's the positive outlook from a real life standpoint, from a fantasy standpoint? I think there are a lot of interesting spots for him, but a lot of spots that could just not work out.
Yeah, well, so the harder part about forecasting John Ross is there's a medical piece that we can't know. He's had a myriad of surgeries. He's a smaller frame guy, and you just wonder about how his body. Sometimes we look back and we say, man, as great a football player as this guy was, his body was just not made to hold up to do what he can do in the NFL. You know, like Bob Sanders, another Washington guy, Buda Baker, who I love. Ooh, if the Steelers take him, I'll change my pants. but he's like a Bob Sanders type. And when I say Bob Sanders, especially if you're a Colts fan, you go like, oh, man, because Bob Sanders' body wasn't made to hold up doing what Bob Sanders does. And,
exactly.
And you wonder about John Ross because of the myriad of injuries and surgeries he's had. So we don't know that. So I think we'll learn one of two things. We'll either learn that he truly got a clean set of medicals and teams are like, hey, all these surgeries took and his body's repaired and there's nothing about his physiology that makes us think that he's just built to break in the NFL. Or perhaps we may learn that, and we won't know until long after the fact, that just this particular team's medical staff, you know, as I say this, JJ, we're reading that Jalen Smith's nerve is starting to regenerate. Ian Rappaport's reporting this right now, right? And what did we learn after the fact last year? Dallas's team doctor did Smith's surgery, right?
Yeah.
So when Dallas took him, you'd say Dallas believes his nerve's going to regenerate. And you know, experts might say, well, no one can really know. But that doesn't mean that the NFL thinks that. That doesn't mean that the 31 other teams. So if John Ross goes to Tennessee at 5 or Carolina at 8 or Buffalo at 10, that doesn't mean that as a consensus the NFL gave him a clean bill of health. But it means that that team's front medical staff did. So he could go in the top 5. I mean, look, if you're looking for what John Ross can do, there's one John Ross in this draft. The name DeSean Jackson's thrown out a lot. That's fine by me. And we have to keep in mind that it's not just fantasy. It's also tactical advantages. You force the defense to defend that deep third of the field when you have John Ross. You just, mm-hmm. And like Will Fuller is like the floor for him. And Will Fuller went, what, 20th or 21st last year?
Yeah, yeah.
So rightfully, John Ross should go in the top 10, 15 picks probably. But the medical stuff is going to definitely, you know, again, we think about first round picks and defensible picks. And John, you take John Ross in the first round and he can't stay healthy, that's not as easy to defend as if you take Mike Williams and he just doesn't grow as a player or something like that. And again, John Ross is one of those players like Corey Davis that once he gets to the late half of the first round, well, who couldn't use a John Ross? Why wouldn't you take? And again, with the variable of the medicals, ideally, God, couldn't he be everything that Indy wanted Philip Dorsett to be?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
absolutely.
You know, man.
I like that fit in Indy a lot. I think a low-key interesting fit for Ross is Detroit.
Sure. They don't have the speed demon.
They don't have the speed guy, and they can create space for guys too. Now, that's where the health concerns you have to be a little bit concerned about too, is that, you know, if you're going to use him closer to the line of scrimmage and allow him to make a play after the catch, that's a little bit scarier. But I think Detroit's really interesting as well. But
Baltimore,
Indy, man, I've
with Joe Flacco.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be one situation that we have to pay attention to as fantasy analysts, because he of all of the receivers, I think, at least the high profile ones, is one that needs to get to the right spot. And unfortunately, there are teams that think that they can do things that they can't with a player like him. Real quick, Sig, I want to get your take. Is this the best tight end class that you've ever seen?
Yes. And especially for the things we care about for fantasy football. There was one draft in 2006 that had, I don't know if it was 8 or 9 tight ends go, and I'm looking it up right now while we're talking. Vernon Davis, Mercedes Lewis both went in the first round that year. Joel Klopfenstein, Anthony Fasano, who's still kicking around, Tony Scheffler, who we thought was going to be really good for fantasy football, Leonard Pope, we knew it was going to be a bust, we knew that. David Thomas, these guys all, Dominique Byrd from USC, and Owen Daniels all went in the top 100 picks. So I think we may see something similar to that this year, 7, 8, 9 guys in the top 100 picks. That's heady territory for a tight end class. But the thing that you really like about this tight end class is, in addition to O.J. Howard and David Njoku, who O.J. Howard could easily be Jacksonville's pick at number 4. And I don't think he's going to get past Cleveland at 12. Njoku, that's another Steelers guy, by the way. But also Tampa, also Detroit. I think you see Njoku in the second half of the round. These guys are more two-way tight ends than there's Evan Engram, who I've already mentioned with the Steelers. Now, he's a pure receiving tight end. And when you get to the second tier of guys like Gerald Everett from South Alabama, Johnny Smith from Florida International, like Adam Shaheen from Ashland, these are Bucky Hodges from Virginia Tech, These are all guys that you're drafting for their receiving ability more than their ability as a two-way tight end, unlike a Howard or Njoku. So we could see as many as these seven. And that doesn't even get to guys like Michael Roberts and Jake Butt and Jeremy Sprinkle, who are good two-way tight ends and in the right offense. Like, put one of them in New Orleans. I mean, Kobe Fleener, thing of the past. Even though they won't threaten downfield like Kobe Fleener, they're competent receivers. They're consistent. And then even further down the board, there are guys outside of the top 10 that you can easily picture being contributors. And again, guys that have more of a receiving tight end standpoint. So from a fantasy football standpoint, we're interested. From an NFL standpoint, we're interested. Again, it has that versatility. It has the mismatches. It's a mismatch league now. So we are going to be listening for the tight end names on the first day, on the second day, on the third day, maybe even some undrafted free agent, interesting guys like Pharaoh Brown from Oregon, or Billy Brown, another big oversized wide receiver. Ricky Seals-Jones from Texas A&M is another oversized wide receiver who might turn into a tight end. And then you saw these teams going with the basketball issue angle too. So it's a fun time to be looking at tight ends and all the non-traditional ways they're getting fed into the position. And then in this case, in the draft, there's a lot of guys that they're evaluating and they see big things for. So clearly the best tight end class we've seen from a strictly evaluation standpoint.
Yes, exactly. That's what I was going to say, is because you can look at 2010, for instance. You got the best tight end of all time and Gronk, and then you have Jimmy Graham there and Aaron Hernandez. And you have these guys that after the fact were great, but they weren't first round picks. We're going into this without hindsight analysis. And that's really what I think is key, that there's just so many good, talented tight ends. It's going to be awesome to see. And the other thing, too, that we have to remember is that the tight end position has evolved over the last decade and a half. And, you know, we haven't had as many opportunities for something like this to kind of come together, or as many opportunities. So that'll be really, really interesting to see. Before I let you go, though, Sig, I want you to give the biggest fantasy football related surprise that could happen in round one. So that could be a running back falling, rising, a great landing spot that happens that we didn't see happening, all of the above. What is your hot take, your fantasy football related surprise?
Well, this one will require some delayed gratification, but I would say the biggest fantasy football related surprise is the Chargers maybe trading back into the first, or maybe even, I don't think the Chargers will take a quarterback number seven, but the Chargers, Giants, the Saints, the Steelers. These are your four teams with really good offenses, really good pass offenses built around their quarterback that may take a quarterback. And because of the nature of this, I forget who it was, but somebody has written stuff about taking quarterbacks late in the first round, late in your draft, and quarterback streaming and how great it is, really revolutionized the way people approach the position in fantasy football. And it also has rippled over to dynasty drafts, dynasty rookie drafts. And you always kick quarterback down the road around in another round. You're going to break guys against quarterbacks in your dynasty rookie drafts. And if the Steelers aren't going to take DeShone Kizer, maybe I'll be wrong. Like DeShone Kizer, because of his ceiling. Oh, my God, his ceiling. If DeShone Kizer goes to the Giants or the Saints or the Steelers or the Chargers, and you can take him later on in your dynasty rookie drafts, now you have a potential elite fantasy quarterback, Patrick Mahomes even. If it isn't someplace like Houston, where he's going to be somewhat limited because he'll be playing early on, and where he can be developed and come into an offense with an Antonio Brown or Odell Beckham or a Keenan Allen or Michael Thomas and Willie Snead, you know, or established pass offense. That could be something that in fantasy football a few years from now we'll look back and we'll say, why didn't we see it coming? Why didn't we see that, of course, giving this quarterback a year or two to develop and putting him in? So much like now the hindsight on Dak Prescott is, well, it isn't that we missed on Dak Prescott. It's that Dallas was such a good situation. Any competent quarterback would have blossomed and flourished in it. That's the Chargers, the Saints, the Steelers, the Giants. It's just a few years from now, not right away like Prescott.
Awesome, awesome stuff, Sig. Thank you so much for taking the time and joining me. And for those of you who aren't already, go on Twitter and follow Mr. Bloom at Sigmund Bloom, and you can check out all of his work over on footballguys.com. And while you do that, make sure you're subscribing to this show by searching for NumberFire NFL Podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or Google Play so you never miss a show. And speaking of shows, the next one will come out tomorrow, but I need your help. Send me some questions for the mailbag episode. preferably early on Friday morning, so that we can get a little draft talk in, because round one will be over at that point in time, and I would love to answer some round one related questions. If you want to submit a question, go ahead and hit me up on Twitter at LateRoundQB or email me at JJ@numberfire.com. Enjoy round one, everyone.